Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this first day of a whole new month, the 1st of July. In late June, President Barack Obama hosted a White House summit on working families, and our guest this hour, Ellen Bravo, was at that conference. And not only was she at the conference, she spoke right after President Obama spoke. He said there's only one developed country in the world that does not offer maternity leave, and that is us. And that's not the list you want to be on by your lonesome. Family leave, childcare, workplace flexibility, a decent wage, the president said. These are not frills, they are basic needs. The 1993 Family Medical Leave Act requires employers to provide leave for medical and family reasons, but it is unpaid leave, and that's very hard for most workers to deal with. Ellen Bravo is our guest this hour. She says paid family leave is enormously popular across the political spectrum. She's been working on making the workplace and the home place more compatible, working to get America to live the family values that our nation cherishes. Ellen Bravo is our guest. She helped found the Milwaukee chapter of 9 to 5, National Association of Working Women, in 1982. Served until 2004 as the national director, now directs Family Values at Work Consortium, which is a network of state coalitions working for paid sick days and paid family leave. She taught women's studies at UW-Milwaukee. She is author of Taking on the Big Boys, co-author of the 9-to-5 Guide to Combating Sexual Harassment, and author of the Job Family Challenge, a 9-to-5 Guide. You may have seen a piece that she wrote in Sunday's Crossroads section of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on mandatory paid leave. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Ellen during the course of this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Hello, Ellen Bravo.
Hi, so good to be here. Thanks
a
lot.
Great to have you here. So how did you get the number two billing at this conference? You spoke right after the president?
I did.
Ooh.
At the time, a lot of people said to me, I felt sorry for you when I saw that you had to speak after the president. I was glad no one said that to me before I spoke. But I actually loved it because the audience was already revved up. And, you know, what I did was to elevate some of the experts in the room that no one knew their names. They were people that we'd brought from Chicago, Detroit, North Carolina. And they were people who, you know, are living examples of what happens when you don't have paid leave. So someone who lost her job when she was pregnant and went into a spiral of debt, as people do, what should be a joyous occasion becomes a trigger for bankruptcy and poverty. Someone who got fired when it was too cold, as we all know, sometimes schools close because of the cold in Chicago, and she has a special needs kid. She said, I won't leave you home alone. And lost, you know, was fired as a result. So people like that who understand the consequences to their own well-being, their family well-being, but also to the economy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know of a woman right now, in the last several months, her husband was diagnosed with what turned out to be terminal cancer. She lives outside Milwaukee, so it was maybe an hour's drive. And literally for her, paying for gas meant no diapers for their baby. They were a very young couple. No one should be in that situation, the United States of America in 2014.
Why is it that we are really the only sort of developed country in the whole world, and there are only a couple other, if you look at the whole world, that doesn't offer some kind of paid maternity leave, Ellen? I don't understand that.
It's the role of lobbyists for mega corporations. Really, that's the difference. That's why we have such great inequality in our country, more than any of the other wealthy countries. And it's why we don't have these common sense and really economically sound policies. There's kind of this knee-jerk, don't tell business what to do. And this is really, you know, there's a misunderstanding. For example, the Bill Smith from the National Federation of Independent Businesses, who wrote the counter piece to mine in the Milwaukee paper on Sunday, he said that what President Obama wanted was to require every employer to offer paid maternity leave. Well, that's not true. What the president said is we should have a way to do this. And there is a way to do this. It's a social insurance fund. It pools very small contributions and makes it possible for people to get a portion of their wages that they've earned while they're out and come back to work. It's a job retention policy. It saves turnover costs, one of the biggest costs that employers have. And, you know, Bill Smith said, hey, if that clerical worker is gone having a baby, you know, that hurts the company. Well, I agree. It would be more convenient if no one got pregnant or sick. You know, we'd have an easier way, but it's not going to happen.
Right.
So we have to figure out how to handle it. And smart companies already have. I mean, that's the good news. Mm-hmm. What we're asking for isn't pie in the sky. It already exists, either in private companies or in public policy. We are celebrating today, July 1st, the 10th anniversary of paid family leave in California, the 5th anniversary in New Jersey, and we'll soon be celebrating the 1st anniversary in Rhode Island. There's a big body of evidence that's grown about these programs, and guess what? The sky didn't fall, business didn't flee. They work great, and businesses overwhelmingly say, it's a good thing I support it, because it means they can what they want, which is for you to be able to be with your dad when he has his stroke and needs some care, and then come back to work. They can't pay you the whole time that you're out. This fund allows that to happen. Mm.
So you're saying that it hasn't been the case that all kinds of Canadians move south because they have paid family maternity leave and we don't, so businesses decided to relocate in America? That has not happened.
That has not happened.
It has not.
At all. And I used the example of two sisters, one in Wisconsin.
It was a good example.
Yeah, and one in Canada, where the sister in Wisconsin gets no paid leave, and the sister in Montreal or wherever in Canada gets 50 weeks at 55% pay.
I don't think people understand, or maybe they do, Ellen, but so many people go through this, and particularly with people of our generation, a baby boom generation, we're dealing with, some of us wait until late in life to have children, and we were also dealing with parents who were ailing and carrying on full-time jobs. I mean, people who have lived through that realize something's wrong with our whole system because you can make yourself sick over all of it. It's way too much.
It's way too much. And let's talk about the consequences. We have higher infant mortality as a result. We have higher maternal mortality as a result. We have more seniors who can't live independently. We have more kids who don't get vaccinations they need, who don't get the well baby visits they need. This is if we care about kids, if we care about seniors, and if we care about families, not to mention people's health and well-being, and not to mention the economy, then we'd say, oh, this is let's do this. In fact, it's embarrassing, to be honest. The things that we're fighting for are paltry compared to what the rest of the world has. I mean, I just told that to someone the other day, that in Scandinavian countries, people get 480 days.
Do they really?
480 wow. days. At least 60 of those days must be taken by the parent who's not going to be the primary caregiver, or the family loses the time. Hmm. And what that means is that many, many more men in those countries mm-hmm. are bonding with their babies and then being closer to them for the rest of their lives. We yell at men for not being responsible fathers, and then when they are, we make their family go into poverty. How does that make sense? This is really if we value families, then we got to do this.
So what happened in 1993? Was there a movement and people realized it was just not going to pass, so they dropped it to get, in addition to family leave, to get paid leave as well? Did that have to be
Let's go back to the beginning. When I had my first child in the United States of America, there wasn't even a law that said you can't be fired for being pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And literally many people were fired for being pregnant. And then the case went to the Supreme Court. This is one of my favorite stories of all times. In case you wonder whether you should question authority, the Supreme Court of the United States of America said that treating pregnant people differently, that was their language, isn't discrimination because not all women are pregnant and therefore it's not a gender issue.
Ooh.
2 years later, in 1978, which is a year after my first kid was born, the Congress, which you may not think they know much, but they got that sex and pregnancy had something to do with each other, they passed the Pregnancy Anti-Discrimination Act. And it just says you can't refuse to hire someone for being pregnant, you can't fire them if they're pregnant, and you have to treat them the same as other employees. Well, the problem is I can't fire you, but I don't have to hold your job open. I don't know how that isn't the same as firing. Mm-hmm. I really don't. But every lawyer I've ever asked said, sorry, that's the way it goes. So we had this problem that you could take off even a small amount of time to give birth and heal and then be told your job is gone, or you have to take the job, you know, at night shift or mm-hmm. something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we all worked hard to pass the Family and Medical Leave Act. Now, the original version of that law, which was passed in 1993, was longer amount of time, but it never included pay. It was always an unpaid bill. And as you know, we won that in Wisconsin in 1988. Many states won it first. That's what built the momentum for the federal standard because, again, we refuted the predictions of doom from the opposition and showed that it was not only not a bad thing for business, it was a good thing for everybody. So we haven't, you know, the idea that you could make it affordable, 2 years after the Family Medical Leave Act was passed, 1995, Congress appointed a bipartisan commission to study the impact of family and medical leave. It was called the Commission on Leave. There were 12 people on it. I was one of them. Six were appointed because our organizations had worked to pass the bill. Six were appointed because they'd worked to stop it. So you can imagine how hard it was to be in a meeting. And nevertheless, we unanimously concluded that it was a good thing. It was good for employees. It did not hurt employers. And we unanimously recommended that states experiment with forms of wage replacement because we knew that lots of people couldn't afford the leave. So I had asked the researchers, would you put in the survey the question, how do you support yourself when you're on leave? 9% said by going on public assistance. I said, would you run the numbers for low-income families? 1 in 5, 20%. Had to go on public assistance while they were on leave. I mean, that doesn't make sense. And guess what? That number is higher today. The most recent survey was done in 2012. It's almost 10% of all respondents said that's how they supported themselves on leave. So we're also saving taxpayer money, not to mention family dignity, by making a pool available that people can get wages while they're out.
So when the president had this conference last week, what did he have in mind? Is he looking mostly at paid maternity leave and he's going to try to get Congress, which isn't doing much about anything, to take this up or do an executive order, can he, or what?
Well, I think what he said and has been working for is let's talk about what we need. Let's change the conversation. Let's make this the norm rather than some kind of extreme notion. This is what's normal. This is what family values means. He's helping set that stage that we all have been building toward for a long time. Secondly, he has put money in his budget for every year, but now already $500,000 the Department of Labor is going to give to five states, $100,000 each, to help start the kind of funds that California, New Jersey, and Rhode Island have. His budget has $5 million for that purpose, and that's money that's accounted for, paid for, better be passed. But then he also has an innovations fund in which he has $100 million for states to do this because there's startup costs to get it going, and then it pays for itself. So what he wants is to see more wins on the state level. He understands that that's the way we'll build toward what he knows we need and says he wants, which is a national paid leave program. There is a bill in Congress that would create such a fund. It's called the Family Act. It was introduced by Kirsten Gillibrand in the Senate and Rosa DeLauro in the House. And we're helping build support for that bill. But in the meantime, we're going to keep getting these wins in the states, the coalitions that are growing all over the country. Mm-hmm.
So explain this to me again. This would be funded by a contribution from an employee, a rather modest amount, to be matched by the employer?
In the states that have already passed it, it's entirely employee funded.
It is.
In the proposal, and you know what we're talking about is, I just rewrote a song called 45 cents doesn't buy a heck of a lot. You know, the pajama game 7.5 cents song. Because that's what it would cost in New York to expand a program they already have, a temporary disability program, to include family leave. Uh-huh. In Rhode Island, it's 64 cents. You know, in New Jersey, it was 60 cents. I mean, it's very small amounts of money. For people who don't already, in a state where they don't already have that kind of fund, maybe it's a buck and a half or two. But it's still small amounts of money. The fund, the national proposed one, would have small contributions both by employers and by employees. We'll see if that stays or gets compromised out. But in places like Canada, for example, where the employer pays 1.4% more than the employee, as you said, there's been no exodus of companies. It's easily affordable. And here's an interesting thing. Many companies, as you know, are multinational corporations. they operate in all these other countries of the world where they participate in funds like this. And then their lobbyists throw up their hands and scream bloody murder when we talk about doing one in the States. It's a disservice to those companies, and it's a disservice to employers everywhere. And I'm happy to say that many, more and more large employers, as well as many small employers, are speaking up with us about the need for these standards, because they already do it because it's the smart thing to do, or they want to do it but can't afford to, and they know a fund like this is the way to go.
So what do they do to replace workers? If you're giving, if you had an ideal world for families, you'd want to have a long period of time, particularly if you just brought a child into the world or you have to nurse a parent, you want to take a chunk of time. I would imagine some employers are saying, we just can't exist without you. We're going to have to hire somebody to replace you. Do you hold a job for that period of time, or what do you do?
Well, according to these programs, you would hold the job. And if you needed to, you'd have a temp. But, of course, you'd be saving their wages, so it would be, it wouldn't be super expensive. And, in fact, temps are usually less expensive because they're—
I see.
Yeah. But I'll tell you something. You know, I worked at 9 to 5. That, we considered it a small business. It, you know, the, in our office here in Milwaukee, at one time, there were 8 staff. 3 were pregnant at the same time.
Oh.
And 2 of them, they overlap by within a month or two of each other. It's so this is what we did. We did what smart employers do. We used it as a development opportunity for one employee who took on new skills and new tasks that she hadn't done. It was really great. Another person was part-time and went to full-time. Another one of the people who was pregnant wanted to space out her leave, come back soon a couple of days a week so that she'd have a longer time. And that worked out for us because we got it took advantage of her skills, but it gave her the leave she wanted. There was also someone who used to work at the organization who knew several of the jobs who came in as a piecemeal basis to fill in. It worked just fine. And we were a better organization for it in the end. I myself, the person who was the national executive director of 9 to 5, took a sabbatical, and I took her place while she was on sabbatical. I got to do a bunch of things I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do otherwise, including go on the Phil Donahue show. And
oh, Phil Donahue, I miss him.
Yeah, and as a result, when it was time for me to take over, I was much more prepared to do it.
Ellen, you've always been pretty prepared, if I might say that. Our phone number, join the conversation. This is playing out, of course, in our real lives. So what are you doing? What do you do when you have to take leave? Do you think that it should be a national policy written into very law in the United States that there is paid maternity leave? What do you think of the issues that the president brought up last week and that Ellen Bravo has been working on for a long, long time? She worked tirelessly on the Family and Medical Leave Act and is now working tirelessly on paid family leave, particularly for maternity leave. How is it that we can be one of the, well, the only country in the developed world that doesn't have this, and there are only, what did she say?
Two other
countries.
Of all the
countries
in the world.
Papua New Guinea,
right.
That don't guarantee paid leave. Isn't that amazing when you think about it?
It's quite amazing.
It is amazing.
I remember when I was pregnant the first time, I have a friend in France who wrote me a letter saying, I feel so sorry for you that you have to have this baby in the United States. And I was horrified. I mean, I'd been an activist for a while. It wasn't that I was naive, but I was naive about how backward the United States was. And then in 1995, I went to this big world conference of women in Beijing that the United Nations put on. And I was in workshops with people from newly post-apartheid South Africa that already had 3 months of paid leave and were working to figure out how to get it to 6. It was, you know, I could mention a few best practice employers. That was it. It was quite humbling and embarrassing.
Here's our phone number. Join the conversation, 800-486-8655. Should we offer paid maternity leave? Should it be something that is available to everyone? Why don't we have it? What are you doing as an employee if you have a child, if you're a mom or a dad or a grandparent who's taking care of a newborn, or you have a spouse who may be sick, or a mom or a dad, or a grandparent who need your help and you have to care for them, what do you do under the system that we have now? What should we have? Is there a better way? The number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And our guest is Ellen Bravo. Ellen helped found the Milwaukee chapter of 9 to 5, was national director of 9 to 5 for a number of years as well. And she now directs Family Values at Work Consortium, a network of state coalitions working for paid sick days and paid family leave. Hour two of our program today, this guy has written one terrific book. I think it should be required reading, The Second Amendment, a biography. Michael Waldman, who decided he would look into the history of the Second Amendment after Newtown, and it is a thorough examination from Revolutionary War times until 2014. So Michael will be with us. He is president of the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU School of Law. All right, to your phone calls for Ellen momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ellen Bravo is with us now, and we're welcoming phone calls. We have a lot of Facebook comments. We'll get to those as well. Our number for you to join us on air is 800-486-8655. And Corey in Watertown is our first caller, Ellen. Hi, Corey.
Hi, how's it going?
All right, Corey, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I got just a couple comments, I guess. The way to solve this type of problem, which is a very significant one in my opinion, is to stop calling it lobbying and start calling it bribery, and get rid of that, and you'll start getting what the people want for this nation instead of what the people with the money want for this nation. When you get if you can get rid of bribing officials legally, make it so they cannot profit in any way from their office while they're in office, other than their paycheck, you will see the people starting getting their way instead of the people with the money getting their way.
Thanks, Corey. I agree with you, Corey. Get money out of politics. I completely agree.
There's a lot in
public financing.
Well, and you make the point in your column on Sunday that this really isn't a partisan issue. People across the political spectrum think this is a good idea.
Absolutely. Voters do. And, you know, when we passed FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, we had bipartisan support. In a number of these states, we have bipartisan support, but not yet in Congress. And that's really a problem. And it's because there's all this pressure from the extreme right wing in the Republican Party. And what we're hoping, I mean, all those folks have someone in their family who's had a baby or someone with autism or Alzheimer's. They understand this problem and they know that people need time to care and not to lose their paycheck or their job as a result of being a good family member. So we hope that that will get through to them. And if not, we hope they'll want to keep their jobs and they'll get that voters are going to count this when they decide who am I going to vote for.
You brought along a Council of Economic Advisors, 9 Facts About American Families and Work. What is this report?
This is a report that the Council of Economic Advisors handed out at the White House Summit on Working Families on last Monday. And one of the things that they point out is, you know, we have a different workforce today. We have a lot more women who are employed outside the home and who are primary or co-primary breadwinners for their family. We have a lot more men who are taking on caregiving responsibilities for their kids, but also for their parents and sometimes for a partner. We have a considerably aging population. So we don't have wives at home full time anymore to take care of all those folks. So we have to figure out how to make the workplace catch up to the changes in the workforce. We heard many examples of terrific employers at this summit. Unfortunately, not all of them have done so, and we have a lot of people who, like, for example, that survey I was talking about, 2.5 times as many people in 2012 as in 2000 were eligible for family leave, needed it, and didn't take it, mostly because they couldn't afford it. And a lot of those people need time for their own health. You know, I know men who have prostate cancer, who need treatment, who said, I can't afford to take time off work or I can't do it. We have people going back to work after giving a baby in 4 weeks and sometimes a four-day weekend. It's shock. It's scandalous. We can do better. And we should remember, we're talking about family leave. So this is also for dads and for people taking care of parents. But even if you have no kids and if your parents are gone, you yourself could have a heart attack or a stroke. You also need a fund like this. That's why it's so important.
Our number is 800-486-8655. You mentioned the states, California being foremost, that have had this for some period of time. Are you looking at a state-by-state strategy here, Ellen, that's eventually what will get the country to do something?
It's a two-pronged strategy. So many states, it's not, are we looking at it? This is all local coalitions that bubble up themselves. They're rooted in their local groups. They have lots very broad and diverse. So, you know, you bring together people who, restaurant owners and restaurant workers, you bring together people who want to get rid of domestic violence and who want to get rid of poverty, and public health, and people care about chronic illness, people care about seniors and kids, all kinds of folks, and business owners. Every one of our coalition has business partners, and of course, labor and women's groups. And so they say, what would really help our families? We need some relief. And then they find out about programs like this, and they say, oh, that's a good idea. We're going to pursue it. So, for example, Vermont, Connecticut, New Hampshire, they all have had task forces to study this. Colorado, Wisconsin, and some other states have bills either pending or are going to be introduced. We'll see a lot more of this bubbling up. Nebraska, Hawaii. At the same time, we're trying to build support for a federal standard, because after all, you don't want someone just because they live in Alabama to be left out of a program. So we're building it wherever we can. We're looking for ways for people to learn from each other's successes and at the same time build support for the Family Act.
You mentioned some of the companies who are part of the conference and that are doing wonderful things. Why don't you talk about some of those? How widespread are these companies who care about family values?
Well, at the summit, several of these were members, are our business partners. So, for example, there was a woman named McKinney Howell, who's a restaurant owner in Seattle, who was one of the leaders of the Paid Sick Days campaign there, and also supporter of increase in minimum wage, because it puts more money in people's pockets to come to places like hers. There was a woman who is part of a company in Brooklyn called Uncommon Good, a woman who runs a software company in Portland called Palo Alto Software. Her name is Sabrina Parsons. A number of those folks spoke, and they all said, "We, your workers are my customers, so I want them not to be in poverty or without jobs. It's good for me and for our economy to do this. I also want our families to be strong. I don't want you to have to give up the care that you want to give or give up your job with me. It costs me money to replace you, but also it goes against my values." Those are the kinds of things. And then we also heard from some large companies. So Tom Nides at Morgan Stanley, for example, he wasn't at the summit, but he has spoken out a lot on the need for paid leave, and that this is he's trying to get other business owners, and he's doing what we're doing, which is saying to companies, you want to be on the list of best places to work? You want to be considered a best practice employer? This is a best practice to speak out for a floor that guarantees at least a minimum to everyone of the things that you know are good practices.
Ellen Bravo is our guest, and we have some Facebook comments. I'm also interested in hearing from you. How are you handling, just as a human being who might be a mom or a dad, or you have a sick relative, what do you do when you need to take time off work? Do you think that we need a national paid family leave program in this country? Can we get by without it? But how is it affecting people on the job now? We'd like to hear from you. 800-486-8655. David on Facebook says, "This, Ellen, as a new father, I got nothing more than what the law mandates. Sure, I can take a bunch of time off, but if I don't work, I don't get paid. It's not much of a realistic choice." It comes down to that, really, doesn't it?
Yes, and guess what? The average amount of time that men take is usually a week or less, and it's a week or two or less, and it's usually vacation days cobbled together. Having a baby is a great joy, but it's not a vacation, and people shouldn't have to use their vacation to do it. I went to a conference a couple weeks earlier that the White House did for working fathers, and there were lots of men there who are part of these networks of dads that want to be responsible fathers and that support policies like this. And I met a lot of people that were just terrific. And, you know, what they say is, don't make dads a spare part. if people go to our website, familyvaluesatwork.org, which I encourage you to do and sign up so that you can get involved in this, and also like our Facebook page, Family Values at Work on Facebook, but you'll see videos, and they're yours. You can download them and show them for free of, for example, a New Jersey dad. His twins were born premature. They were in neonatal care for 68 days. And the doctor said, look, these kids are too fragile. They can't go to daycare till they're 6 months old. Because of New Jersey's paid family leave program, he and his wife could share the time and keep those babies home till they were 6 months. In the video, the kids are 2.5. And they're fabulous. It shows him with them at the playground. And he said, if you had told me I'd have inside jokes with my 2.5-year-olds, you know, I'd never believe you. But he said it was wonderful to have this bonding. It's changed my experience with them forever. And he said, you know, people have this outdated notion that dad's the breadwinner, mom is the caregiver. This goes out the window when you're in a situation like this, and we're all the better for it.
Yeah. Patty is next in Eau Claire. Hi, Patty.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
This is just totally embarrassing for our country. I have a nephew who is a wonderful single parent of a young son who works for, and I'm going to say it, Amazon. And they had a policy that if you miss, you get 10 points. If you miss anything for any reason with a doctor's excuse or whatever, you're fired. And when his son was sick, he stayed home with them. He got fired. Oh. His mother tries to help out with that. But she's also living with our parents, trying to do caregiving for them. And she quit a job to help do that. Parents are helping to pay for her to be able to do that while we're all holding hands, watching everybody's finances in the family go down and down and down because we're trying to help each other. And it just makes no sense to me the way we're treating families and each other in this country these days.
Patty,
I'll listen off the air.
All right, Patty,
I really appreciate you calling. I'm so sorry that your nephew is going through this, and I hate to tell you how typical it is. And I urge you both to get involved in the fight here in Wisconsin to change it. Think about all the people that are affected by that policy that Amazon has. And can I just say, 50% of companies, apparently, in this country have what you just described, an absence control policy where you get points, usually regardless of why you're out. And then people are scared, even if they earn paid sick days, they're scared to take it because they're afraid they'll get points and then they'll get suspended without pay or terminated. It's, you know, outrageous. And it spiraled into the, you know, the adult parent who's trying to help out and had to give up her job. It means less income for the stores and shops in their community, roofs that don't get fixed, cars that don't get repaired, new shoes that don't get bought, etc. But do you think the baby doesn't know? The babies feel that stress too. And so here we are trying to take care of each other in an atmosphere that harms all of our well-being. And the good thing is we can fix it. We know what it looks like. It's very easy to do. It works. It's possible right now for us to change that in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And it's going to take us to do it. And that's the other good thing is that people just like us are doing it. That's how they won in these other states. And that's how we're going to do it here.
Well, it's obviously the humane thing to do. When it comes down to it, if you have a choice, if you have to be with your parent or if you have to be with your child who's sick, that's what you have to do. I mean, there's no question about it. And you'll go through hoops and live on food stamps or not much food in order to do that. My question to you is, we're all human beings. We all kind of understand that because we've been through it in one way or another. We've been talking about this for years, Ellen. Why does it take so long to become translated into a reality?
You know, I'm so every day in our work, and by the way, I wanted to say, when you talk about me being tireless, I do work hard, but I also relax. I'm part of organizations that walk their talk that say that we need to take time for ourselves, and it's one of the reasons why I'm so active and involved, because I've been able to restore, to get get that back all the time. But the problem is that we're every day up against these opponents. who claim to be the business community. They claim to speak, particularly for mom-and-pop shops, when really they're mouthpieces for mega corporations who can easily afford to do these things and easily afford to allow it to happen and are standing in the way because sometimes just because they have misinformation. We have a lot of business owners, for example, once that was studied, the program in California, New Jersey, they said, you know, I was really nervous about this, but not only has it not been a problem, not only have people not abused it, but it's been a good thing. Morale around here is a lot better. People can be with their families, which I support, and I don't have to replace them permanently. And that's a lot harder to do than figuring out what to do while they're out for a few weeks or months.
Thank you very much, Patty, for your call. All the best to your family, your hardworking family. Adam and Ladysmith, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I just wanted to kind of bring up the fact that there's a lot of men out there that have to take off of work that, my wife had a C-section, for example, and it was kind of hard to take care of, everything that needs to be taken care of after her first C-section. Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad she had you to do that, and I know lots and lots of dads who want to be good dads like that, but then the family takes a financial hit as a result. We have a booklet of stories called Voices from the Front Lines on our Family Values at Work website, and you'll read about a person who just like that, who had a C-section and also had postpartum depression and so badly needed her husband to take care of her and the baby. And he had to go back after a week because the family just couldn't afford the time. And, you know what kind of joy and care that guy would have been able to provide.
Sure.
During the day had he been there. So
exactly.
We appreciate you and the role that you're playing. And these programs that we're fighting for will help make it possible for a lot more men to be good fathers.
And what happened with your job, Adam?
I want to take in 6 weeks off. My wife, she just, because we have three other children that, need the special attention of their needs and wants, and I wound up taking 6 weeks off. Thankfully, it was around tax time and everything, so we had a little bit that we could budget around to take care of everything. So.
And it was okay with your employer? Did they understand?
They completely understood. The unfortunate part is that we didn't, it wasn't paid.
Right.
So, but like I said, it was now hindsight. I'm glad that I took the 6 weeks off because a couple months after that, my daughter had passed away from crypto.
Oh, my goodness, Adam.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Oh, wow. Go ahead, Ellen.
Well, these are the... the lives of people throughout our country who for whom saying goodbye is so difficult anyway, and then they also have to deal with, these financial hits.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry you had to go through that, and I'm sure it was a great comfort to her when she was ill knowing that she had the kind of care she did from you.
Yeah. Thank you, Adam, very much for your call. We'll take more for Ellen Bravo in just a moment, 800-486-8655. Ellen was second to the president, the most important speaker at the White House Summit on Working Families last week. Oh, why not? I can give you that title, huh? She spoke right after the president. And he was looking at paid maternity leave and also talked about child care, workplace flexibility, a decent wage, calling them not frills but basic needs. The 1993 Family Medical Leave Act, which Ellen worked on tirelessly, does require employers to give employees leave for medical and family reasons, but it is unpaid leave. Has the time come to make it paid leave? What are other states doing in this regard? What have other countries done in this regard? We welcome your phone calls, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ellen Bravo is here now, paid Maternity leave is what we're talking about, paid family leave, and welcoming your phone calls. We'll go back to calls in a moment. We have a number of Facebook comments coming in, too, Ellen. John on Facebook says this: we're the only developed nation without a federal maternity, paternity, time off law. Family and medical leave is basically a joke in that regard. Moms are treated badly, and dads get screwed.
Yep, that's the truth.
Let's go next to Willie in La Crosse. Hello, Willie.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up
Millie,
the point
sorry.
Of parents being put into nursing homes because the caregivers, the children, can't afford to take a day off when they need to take them to doctor's appointments or to provide occasional additional care. And a lot of these parents will exhaust their resources and end up on Title 19, which doesn't do anybody any good.
You're so right, and it's one of the reasons why a lot of senior groups are involved in these state coalitions, because they understand that if we care about seniors living independently and with dignity and staying in their own homes, then we have to make sure that their adult children don't get punished for being good children to their parents. And there, I remember a hospital administrator in Atlanta who said, our hallways are lined with seniors who have to wait all day after a procedure or an appointment because their adult children aren't allowed to get to take off to come get them or to be with them while they have the procedure. You know, I remember meeting a woman who had had brain surgery, and her adult children could not come because they would have been docked their pay. Imagine waking up from brain surgery and there's no one there. I remember when, this is also true for kids, you know, when we won paid when we won unpaid family leave in Wisconsin in 1988, we took a group of kids who each told their own story of why their parents had needed time off. And one of them was a kid who'd had cancer. He was 9. He'd had cancer when he was 5. We reprised that. We brought kids back in 2013 to celebrate the 25th anniversary and tell people who wanted to gut what was better about Wisconsin's family leave, don't you touch it. And we found that guy. His name is Noah Michelson. And he said he knew when he was 5 that there was a kid in the next bed whose parents were not there during the day. He just didn't know why. Both his parents were able to be with him. And he said he remembers a lot about that kid, including that he loved the Supremes and that he always sang Stop in the Name of Love.
Oh, Ellen.
I thought that should be the theme song of our movement.
You got
Stop
it.
Stop in the Name of Love. Whether
I
it's
like that.
For seniors or
yep.
for kids, we just can't do this anymore. We yeah. can't allow it.
It's hard enough when you're 55 or 60 to have nobody there. Imagine being a 5-year-old yeah. going through that and have nobody with you.
Yeah.
I like that. Stop in the Name of Love. That's good. Millie, thanks so much for your call. Charlie in Oshkosh. Hi.
I just have three comments. Number one is, whatever happened to planning for a rainy day, which I did and my parents did and my grandparents did. Number two is, why does the operation have to be at 6 o'clock in the morning? Why can't it be at 6 o'clock at night when the person can get off of work? There are all kinds of other solutions rather than saying, I'm not responsible for me, let the government take over or let my boss take over. You're responsible for you. I take my year off the air.
All right, Charlie.
The great thing about these programs is that they help people be just exactly the responsible employee and responsible family member that everybody wants to be. Because it pools small contributions from all of us. That's what it's a social insurance pool. That's why it works. It's really smart. So people aren't asking the government to do anything but just allow the formation of these funds and help administer them. They pay for themselves and they help people do exactly what you're saying. Some people are able to sock some money away. But for so many families in our country, literally, they're living paycheck to paycheck. And sometimes things happen. You lose a partner to death or divorce or abuse. You have to get out. So, we can't always plan what's going to happen. If 9/11 taught us anything, it's that any one of us could disappear at any time. And we need to be able to make sure that we can take care of ourselves and our loved ones if something unforeseen happens. It's also a good thing for our society that people have babies and, reproduce labor. We all need that. And we all need those kids to be healthy and go to school and stay in school. We don't want kids missing school because they have to take care of a younger brother or sister because the parent will be fired if they do. These programs are in all the, of our interest of building a responsible society and strong families.
Have you looked at, I know you have, other countries to find what you're talking about, a system now that's available in some states? Do you have an ideal of something that would be just really good for all of us?
Yeah.
And it might be a dream for us now?
I think it's perfectly feasible. I wrote about it in Taking on the Big Boys, because what it would look like is what we really should have is a year paid leave that the couple could share. And these could be same-sex or opposite-sex couples. It wouldn't matter. That we would have universal health care, so you wouldn't have to be attached to your workforce all the time to be able to have health care. We'd have quality daycare. You wouldn't have to start going to daycare, the baby, until the baby was at least a year. And then they'd go maybe for 10 hours, 15 hours, kind of ease into it. Never maybe more than 20, 25 hours, because parents would work a 35-hour work week. You know, for a long time, we shortened the number of hours of work, and then that stopped. And to afford all that, there are two people who figured this out, what it would cost to have all the things that I just said, a leave program and the child care, the health care. It would cost 1.5% of the gross domestic product. Just to put that in perspective, forget how much we've spent on illegal wars. I'm not even going to go there. Just talk about corporate welfare, how much money we give away to, you know, McDonald's to market McNuggets in China, or all kinds of other giveaways. There's a whole book written about this, Get the Rich Off Welfare, and other kinds of tax loopholes. We spend five times as much money on those loopholes and those corporate giveaways. If we just changed a fifth of that, we could afford all the things I just described. It's not that we don't have the money, and it's not that we don't have the will. It's that we don't have the political climate. That's what we're building by showing people that when you stand together and form these broad and deep coalitions, that we can get this done.
Facebook comment from Kathy: the U.S. is behind almost every other developed nation in parental leave benefits. It shows again that the almighty dollar wins and caring for your fellow person or child is secondary. Don't we want to raise healthy, well-rounded children who have support at home? Many children don't have that chance due to minimum wage jobs and unpaid leave.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, every day if you go to hospitals in our country, you will see it's something called a caged bed for toddlers because their parents can't be with them during the day. One of our leaders in Maryland just wrote an op-ed about this. Her four-year-old had to have facial reconstruction surgery. He's going to be fine. He has to have a few of these, but he'll be all right in the end. And she and her husband both have paid leave. They could be with him for the 5 days he was there. But they took him for a walk in a red wagon. They saw a lot of kids who are going to be there for a very long time. And their son didn't ask, why is that kid bald or why is that kid hooked up to a machine? He said, why is that kid all alone? Where are his mommy and daddy? And he saw a lot of those kids. Hmm. It is appalling that in the United States of America in 2014, that should be true. And we can change it by creating these funds. This is what we're fighting for right now is measly, not just minimal. And yet it's a start, and we need to do it, and we need all of your participation.
We have about a minute left. Jeanette in Ladysmith, hi.
Hi. I don't have a comment as much as I do a question for a previous caller. Changing the schedules for surgeries from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., just who is going to convince surgeons, nurses, hospitals to completely change their protocol and completely change their scheduling, because our employers do not, in fact, support family values, such as being with an elderly parent, with a child, with whomever in your family that needs you. Just who is going to make this huge change in our entire medical establishment? And I'd like to hear what your guest has to say.
All right. Thanks, Jeanette, for the call. You have 15 seconds.
You can do it. The changes we need are in public policies, not in surgery schedules. And I hope that I invite you all to go to our website, familyvaluesatwork.org, and we'll plug you into the coalition in Wisconsin so that you can be part of that change.
Familyvaluesatwork.org.
And just sign up where it says get involved.
All right. Thanks, Ellen, so much. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Ellen Bravo, our guest. Ellen has been working on these issues for quite some time. You'll probably, if you're in Milwaukee, be very aware that she founded the Milwaukee chapter of 9 to 5, the National Association of Working Women, in 1982. She served as national president as well of that organization, now directs Family Values at Work Consortium, and is working on many of these issues, first and foremost, paid family and medical leave for employees. We thank her for being with us. Thanks to KP Whaley, as always, for producing this program. Thank you, KP. Thanks for your calls. If you want to leave messages on our Facebook page on this topic, we'd like to hear from you as well. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Stay with us. The Second Amendment, Hour 2.